This is your host, Adam Como, and welcome to Episode 4 of the Walking Closer Podcast. Welcome to the Walking Closer Podcast, a podcast designed to help you become more like Jesus from the inside out. Today's episode, we're going to talk more about the mind by further exploring the concepts of thoughts and feelings and the roles they play in a transformed mind. So let's get started. Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in for this podcast. Now, in our previous episode, we explored the six basic aspects that make up human life that can be found in the late Dallas Willard's book called Renovation of the Heart. Now, as a quick reminder, when we talked about thoughts and feelings, and those two things really make up the mind. I know the mind is more complex and complicated than that, but typically when we think about the mind or we talk about the mind, that's really what we're focused on, our thoughts and our feelings. And so as a result, that's how we're going to talk about the mind as well. We also talked about the idea that we have a will or a free moral ability to choose, should we say. And when we talk about the heart or the spirit that we have, the spirit of man or the will, we're really talking about those all the same thing. We also talked about the fact that we live this out through our body and in a social context. And when the sum of all these aspects is what we refer to as the soul. And so those are the six basic aspects that make up the human life. And today I want to talk a little bit more about our thoughts and our feelings and then kind of the roles they play in a transformed mind and what that might actually look like. And so we're going to look at maybe the difference between a mind that is formed away from God and a mind that is formed under God. And so when it comes to thoughts and feelings, just as a quick review again, we've covered some of this before, but let's go into a little bit further detail here. Remember, thoughts bring things before our minds, like images and concepts, memories, you know, our beliefs and our own perceptions, okay? And feelings are just sensations and emotions, which they can either be pleasant or painful, right? They pull us away from things we find repulsive or that we're not attracted to, and they actually pull us towards the things that we are attracted to, right? And remember, feelings and thoughts are interconnected, and they're so interconnected, okay? And incidentally, it's actually, we're able to somewhat control our feelings through our thoughts, and not so much control our thoughts through our feelings, okay? Very interesting how they're so interconnected and so integrated with one another. And our thoughts, they actually determine what we do. They have the power to, think about it, they provoke feelings that can either motivate us to either do something or not do something. And so thoughts and feelings, they actually influence our actions. And so let's talk a little bit more about our actions and what influences our actions before we go any further here. Remember, all of these aspects that we talk about of our makeup, our thoughts, our feelings, or should we just sum that up as our mind, our will, our body, our social context, our soul, all these aspects that they interact. They're integrated, they're connected, and they actually influence each other. Now, ultimately, what we do, that is the actions we take, are a result of all of these aspects engaging one another. Okay, and what we do is not simply based on our will, our thoughts, or our bodies, or any of the other aspects individually or alone, because any one of these is influenced by the other. So an act of the will is not just simply an act of the will, for the will is actually influenced, right, by our thoughts and our feelings and a host of other factors in our social context that we're not going to really even go to at this point. And so what this means when it comes to change is that we cannot simply focus on the will in order to enact change, right? This is not about behavior management. You can't just will a change into place. Now, it might be a short-term solution for managing behaviors, but there's no It will not enact lasting change, okay? And you see this oftentimes with addiction, or for an example, you see this with men and women who are addicted to pornography, or, and we could talk about other sexual abuses, but let's specifically focus here on pornography. I've seen it, I've heard it, where people who are addicted, they want to overcome it. They come to this place where they want a change. They realize the grip that this has on their life. They want something different. It's no longer satisfying. And while they come to this place where they see how, okay, there's some temporary satisfaction, but it ultimately leaves them in a worse place than they were in the beginning. And this is just vicious cycle, and they don't know how to overcome it. They want out. And so they seek help, okay? And oftentimes what ends up happening is, especially when they seek help from people who are just not knowledgeable in these areas or don't understand how the mind works with behaviors and addictions, oftentimes what people, the response that they get is just to stop doing it, okay? Just stop doing it. In fact, you hear this oftentimes, like especially if you reveal this addiction to a loved one or someone who is a friend or you know, who cares about you. What 9 times out of 10 you're going to hear is you need help and you need to just stop. And they don't understand why you can't just stop, not realizing that if you could just stop, you would, which is why you're seeking help, because it's not enough. You realize that there's more to it than just stopping. And even if you put in certain filters or parameters, or you set up certain guidelines and things that are going to help you from being able to access pornography or, you know, fall back into those actions, at the end of the day, it'll only do so much. And while it may be a temporary fix to controlling some behaviors, ultimately, it's not going to necessarily deal with a long-lasting change. That is, it's not going to deal with the things that bring about long-lasting change. It's not going to deal with what's at the core of the issue there and why you continue to go back to it and why you're seeking this escape and so forth. And so just enacting, you know, on the will itself, that's not going to bring about long-lasting change. It's not going to bring about the change of heart that needs to take place, because here's the thing: our actions come out of our whole person, okay? And we have to see the importance of focusing on all these aspects of who we are and realigning them in the proper order. And so when we get back to the mind, our thoughts, they do strongly influence our hearts, okay? It's not just about you choosing and your will. Our thoughts strongly influence our hearts. And that's why Paul said things like this, like we need to be transformed by the renewing or the renovation of the mind, and fix your thoughts on what is true and noble and right and pure and lovely, right? On holy and righteous things, things that are praiseworthy and excellent. And set your minds, your thoughts on things that are above. And all of these passages that Paul talks about, like in Romans and Philippians and Colossians, these passages are speaking to this concept of spiritual formation and the process of transforming the mind under God. And it's through this process where the mind, along with all the other aspects of who we are, come into alignment under God. And when that happens, you see a mind that works quite a bit differently than before. That's all about spiritual formation and specifically transformation. So what might that actually look like? Okay, and I want to take an example from James chapter 1, where he says things like, consider it an opportunity for great joy when you fall into various trials or hardships that come your way. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know anyone really who gets excited and filled with joy when they see trouble coming down the line. Or when they're facing hardships, you see very few people, if any at all, who actually look at those things as opportunities to be filled with joy. But James says we can, okay? And here's the thing. When hard times come your way, you don't immediately think the worst case scenario. Like, you're not going to be thinking that there is no hope when you have a mind that is have been transformed and realigned under God. Instead of thinking, you know, that this is the worst case scenario, and that there is no hope here. Instead of that, you look at the circumstances from a completely different perspective, with a willingness to face it because of the hope that you have, the hope that is the trust and the expectation in God, and that He's going to provide, and He's going to care, and He's going to guide, and that no matter what happens, all things work together, right, for the good of those who love God. Like, you actually believe that, and that it strengthens, right, this trust and this expectation you have in God. And so when you look at these things coming your way, you find yourself in the middle of all these hardships, you see it as an opportunity. Like, you look at it completely different. Instead of it being some catastrophic problem, you see it as an opportunity, okay? And then verse 2 of James 1 ends up making sense. Consider it an opportunity for great joy. See, and it's a mind that functions completely different than a mind that has been formed away from God, okay? Another example, in a mind formed away from God, when, let's say, someone hurts you, abuses you, mistreats you, or offends you in some way, shape, or form, all sorts of emotions and feelings, right, start stirring up within us, and that brings up on, we have tons of images and thoughts that are in our mind that really bring these feelings upon us, and the mind is filled oftentimes with thoughts of, you know, revenge and how to retaliate, and as a result, they open up the door for us to be ultimately controlled by anger, where the things we say end up being abusive or vulgar, right? These thoughts and feelings, they fill our hearts with a bitterness and a rage, and we act out through words and actions that are harmful, that hurt the people around us, and oftentimes hurt the people that we love, the people that we're closest to, and the people that maybe we don't even know. It just, oftentimes, it'll close a door for us having any kind of impact or any kind of relationship with them. And so the mind formed under God, though, will act, let's just say, quite a bit differently. That is, for example, when someone hurts us, abuses us, mistreats us, offends us, however we want to say it. When that happens, okay, when a mind is formed under God, being transformed, when we're taking on the mindset of Christ, the Christ consciousness is how I like to say it, the pain that comes from others hurting us, abusing us, being mistreated, being offended, I'm not necessarily saying that pain will go away. It may still exist, but we deal with it and we address it differently. There still may be things that when it happens that we have to work through emotionally, but ultimately forgiveness is quite a bit easier. And so how or why? Well, because the mind is not in a place where it wants to pay back evil for evil. Instead, it actually always tries to do good to everyone, right? And even Paul actually mentions this to his letter that was in 1 Thessalonians. And instead, you want to pay people back with a blessing, right? Peter talks about this, 1 Peter 3, verse 9. And the mind, you see, is in such a place where you don't feel like you're going to lose something or be robbed of something if you forgive someone, right? We don't like this idea of someone getting one on over us, right? We don't like this idea of somebody getting away with something, with hurting us. And ultimately, we're not really thinking about forgiveness as much as we're thinking about justice, but justice in our way, not justice from God's eyes, but justice in our way. See, because justice in our way says that everything will be okay once there's payback, right? Some equal opportunity for me to get back on you or get back at you. But that's not forgiveness. Forgiveness says, I forgive you. I'm letting go of this and you don't have to pay me back, right? You don't have to pay me back. That's what forgiveness is. And so you end up being in a place where you don't feel like you're losing something or being robbed of something, of this opportunity, this chance to get back at someone has been taken away from you. You don't feel that way, right? You want to forgive them. And in fact, you want to forgive them because forgiving them will fill you with joy, because you're no longer carrying the burden that anger and unforgiveness and retaliation and you know, all those things play, the burden that it places on us, it ends up controlling us, right? Like, when someone gets one on over you, when you feel like there's this need for revenge and payback, your mind becomes consumed with what to do and these feelings and these emotions and these thoughts and these images and of what's been done to you and then ultimately what you're going to do to them. But a mind transformed by God, under God, a mind that's being transformed to the image of Jesus, the mindset of Christ, well, it recognizes the burden and the pain that comes with carrying around these feelings of animosity and anger and payback and revenge. And it actually wants to forgive because it's an opportunity to be filled with joy, okay? Because you're no longer be carrying that burden around. And you don't want to carry that burden around. And so you're quicker to forgive. And so, and ultimately, these are the results, okay, of having your mind set on the things that are above that Paul talks about in Colossians chapter 3. I mean, if you go through that chapter and read what he said there, you'll see the things that we're talking about, how they fall in line with what he's saying, what he wrote there. And so, therefore, you know, the goal is to have God before our minds always, you know. And part of the way we do this is to look at the person of Jesus as we are being his disciple, where our thoughts are being trained to be upon God. Not just in moments of study or quiet contemplation, which I think a lot of people haven't even gotten there yet, but your mind being trained to be upon God, not during those specific times, but throughout our days, throughout all of our interactions, whether you know it's with our spouses, with our children, with our families, whether it's at the workplace or whether it's at play or out in our community, whatever it is that we're doing, we have that mind of Christ where our mind is always upon God, doing the will of the Father. And it becomes a very natural thing to us. And that's what a transformed mind looks like, okay? And where we truly love God with all of our heart, all of our soul, all of our mind, and all of our strength. What we like to say at our church is where we are madly in love with God and loving others. See, when we're madly in love with God, okay? Think about this. When you are in love, what happens? It's always on the brain. That is love. It's that person, that thing you're in love with, right? It's always on the brain. I remember when I started, my wife and I got together. I actually lived in Florida and she lived in Texas. And so it was a really long distance relationship. And so I couldn't see her. All I could do was hear her voice. I had obviously had pictures of her. But she was always on my mind. Always, okay? Always. Everything I did, everything I said, the things that I was focused on were in relation to her. Now, okay, since we've been married, you might say, well, that was that infatuation in the beginning. Well, here's the thing. When we tied the knot, right? I put a ring on it, and she said, I do. And we're a couple, and we've been a couple for, it'll be 15 years this year. My life changed, and I became one. And no matter what I do, my mind is still always there on my wife. She's always with me. And when we're not together, there is something that is incomplete. There's something that is missing, okay? But my mind is always with her. She's always in my thoughts. Everything that I do is with her in mind. That relationship changes and affects how I act, how I respond, particularly to the opposite sex, how I act and how I respond in my workplace and all that I do. It's in light of who I am as her spouse. And it's the same concept when it comes to being disciples of Jesus. And so that's all the time we have today. And I hope this paints a better picture for you of the role our thoughts and feelings play and ultimately what that looks like in a transformed mind. And so next episode, we're going to focus our attention on our wills, our hearts, our spirit, right? Where we are essentially going to go through the same process and look a little more at its role and what a transformed heart looks like. Thanks for joining me for this episode. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share with those who might benefit. Make sure to join us next time as we explore becoming like Jesus from the inside out.